Hello and welcome to this podcast, created as part of the RCGP Veterans Friendly Practice Programme. In this episode, we're discussing transitioning from the military and the challenges that leaving can bring to former service personnel and their families. I'm Nikki Murdoch and I'll be chairing the podcast. I'm an Army veteran of 30 years, a former CEO of the military charity the Defence Medical Welfare Service, a cancer survivor, and now I'm the independent chair of NHS England's Armed Forces Public Patient Voice Group. I also happen to be a member of the government's Veterans Advisory Board. I'd like to start by giving you some context. There are about 2.4 million veterans in the UK, with 15,000 personnel leaving the military every year. Military transition simply means the change from military to civilian status, but each person making that change will have very individual needs. So that's why we've created the episode for all NHS GPs, to bring awareness to the special needs of veterans, particularly in relation to transition. Many ex-service personnel will find leaving forces straightforward, and most veterans contribute significantly and very effectively to our society. But for others, especially if their departure is not planned because of illness or injury, it can be a bewildering experience. This is why it is vital for you to understand their needs and culture and how vital their relationship with their GP really is. It's important that that relationship is a positive one. To help with giving clarity on this issue, I'm delighted to be joined today by Brigadier Robin Simpson, a GP, a veteran, and the Royal College of General Practitioners Veterans Champion. He left the Army in January 2020 after 35 years' service. Robin, would you like to introduce yourself and your role?
Nikki, thanks very much. So I was a military GP all my career. I served all over the world, more recently in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I then, all the time, I've been a GP educator, training military doctors in how to be a military GP. My experience of the military has given me good insight into what the needs of our patients are, and particularly when they leave the military and become NHS patients. And I've used my role as an educationalist to take on the role of the RCGP Veterans Champion, training the NHS GPs about the special needs of veterans. And that's, you know, my main mission for now.
Brilliant, Robin. Thank you. So lots of experience both in the military and in the NHS, which is fantastic. Alongside him is our expert, really, the veteran Colin Brown, who has spent 29 years in the Royal Marines Band Service. He's retiring in November and has served as the Corps Drum Major in the Royal Marines, which is a fantastic role. Colin, tell us a bit about what you've done.
Good afternoon, Nikki. My name, W1 Colin Buster Brown. I joined the Royal Marines Band Service age 17 straight from school. And as you mentioned, I leave after 29 years in November. I started my career as a bugler and drummer, and then throughout my career, I progressed and took on the drum major course, ending my career as the Corps Drum Major. I've led the Royal Marines at major ceremonial events, including recently the funeral of the Duke of Edinburgh in April, also at the Royal Edinburgh Military Tattoo on several occasions, on tour in Edinburgh and on tour in Australia and New Zealand. Other notable ones, occasions, is the VJ75 parade. I've led the Royal Marines Band at the Cenotaph for the annual Remembrance Parade on many occasions, and also at the Royal British Legion Festival Remembrance at the Royal Albert Hall.
Brilliant, Colin, and sterling work done by all members of the Royal Marines Band Service, I know at first hand. I wonder if we could turn now to looking at what happens when we leave the military. And I'd like to start by asking Colin about your experience of transitioning in the context of healthcare and the information that you got or are being given and its relationship to your GP as you approach Civvy Street. And Robin, I'll come to you in a second to get your experience well, if I may. Colin.
Well, I think the first thing for me is the reality when JPA, which is the personnel system, automatically sends you a notification when you're 2 years away from leaving the service saying you've got 2 years left. So then that starts the process of looking at when you're going to leave and how you're going to leave. There is a lot of support if you want it for transitioning, for leaving the service in regards to looking for a new job and help and support. But from the medical side of things, I've had very little from the service side of things. One thought that has recently come to me is you receive what's called a careers transition workshop, which is a 3-day seminar teaching you about things like LinkedIn, CVs, other things along that. But at not one point did it touch the medical side of it. So perhaps that could be one thing from the military where we could do better.
I think that's very interesting, Colin, and I think Robin might have something to say. And my observation would be that actually everything's done for you when you're in the military. You know precisely what you've got to do, but it's a subordinate to the organisation. And what happens as we transition to Civvy Street is we actually have to do it ourselves, and that includes registration with a GP or a dentist to ensure that our healthcare is looked after. Robin, what was your experience and what thoughts would you offer in terms of transition for GPs to note?
For me personally, I've got a pretty boring record as a patient. There's not much, but I remember going for my discharge medical and suddenly hit me. Actually, I was on the wrong side of the bed and I was the one that was having the medical. And I got asked probably about 400 questions and then that was it. And I was given a piece of paper and told go and register with an NHS GP. Now, of course, I am a GP, so I know the system. So I then went to my practice, which is quite near my house, and the first thing that happened was the person at the door asked me, mate, have you got an appointment? And I'm thinking, hang on a minute, you could just walk into a medical centre. And eventually I got to reception and I had 4 sheets of paper from that medical. And the second thing the receptionist said was, well, we're a paperless practice. We don't really want any bits of paper. Can you take a picture of your notes and then email them into us? So that was me registered with the practice. Clearly, I haven't actually had any major problems. I have been in touch with the medical centre over vaccinations, so I've been okay. But, you know, big issues for me are the fact that the NHS GP will have great difficulty getting hold of my notes. So my 35 years of notes, which are pretty boring, I might say, but still relevant and contains things like my blood pressure and weight and all immunizations that I've had, the NHS GP will have to apply for those records and it will take a number of months. So though in the military, as a military GP, you use an electronic medical system, and as does the NHS GP, the two things don't match up. So there's the bit around the patients moving from this organized organization of the military that does everything for you. You've got a medical center on camp, you just walk in. You would be unlucky if you had to wait more than half an hour, and you kind of expect to be seen that day. You go to your NHS GP, you know, it's very different. The majority of people in the military are men, that's changing. And on the whole, blokes aren't very good patients, they don't say very much. We're very happy to be asked questions, but unless you know that someone being in the military, you're going to miss something. So, you know, the top thing to ask for the NHS GP is asking that question, have you ever served in the military? And then there's an explanation as to why we haven't got 35 years of your notes. And there are particular issues pertinent to being a veteran. Sticking to the transition, you know, I remember the day, as Colin said, when I had 2 years left and I did various courses. But the day that I handed in my ID card was really odd. You know, I felt empty. I felt I'd lost a family. I felt I didn't know what to do with myself. I know it's a bit bizarre and many people have gone through many things, but you know, it was a big change and I've been well supported, my family, and it's been fine. But definitely the day that I handed my ID card, I was a different person and I didn't know what to do. And you know, it sounds a bit odd having to register with a GP or having to find an NHS dentist, but it wasn't something I was prepared for.
It's interesting. I'm sure that Colin and I both identify with that. And there is a sort of a moment when you're almost bereaved about that sort of transition. And I wonder whether you would recommend, Robin, a veteran or somebody in transition asking for their records before they left in order to make that easier. Because, again, based on what Colin said, that doesn't appear to be something that, in terms of information, that is passed to people in transition.
I think that, you know, it's most likely that you would be allowed to get a copy of your record and you would get a copy of that final medical that you have, but it would be unlikely that you'd get a copy of the whole records. So I think that if you've got an ongoing medical problem, I think that the military would bend over backwards to make sure the information is transferred. I think that the majority of servicemen that leave the military, that the medical side of things is not their priority. Where am I going to get a job? Where am I going to work? Where's my family going to leave? What schools are my kids going to go to? And, you know, I was a little bit past all that, but I think the servicemen, when they're leaving, there's a huge number of priorities and medicals right at the bottom. Because being a bloke, why on earth would you'd never get ill? You don't need any help. And then suddenly you're no longer serving and you probably may need help. So, you know, I think that the military could do better. And what a shame that there isn't a seamless transfer of the electronic notes, that would help.
Yes, indeed. I think that's some way off, though. Colin, in terms of your preparation for transition, you've clearly, I suspect, registered with a GP. How easy was it to find a GP practice to register within? What help did you get in that process?
Well, actually, the help I got was my wife. Having followed me round for the last few years and moved practices, it was nothing new to her. So she was the one that led on, because we moved and we've moved house, so leaving the service and relocating. So as part of that process, she was the one who said, we need to find a doctor and you will need one. On that one, so we then found a local practice and we got the forms, filled them in, handed them in. On handing them in, it said, oh, you need your NHS number. Yeah, I've been, like you say, everything is pretty much done for you in the services, that side of things. And yeah, where is my NHS number? So I did have a good trawl around and managed to find it on JPA. But it's things that you don't think you need or not realise you need. But the actual process of getting registered was fairly straightforward and, like I say, led by my wife. However, we are going away on holiday shortly, so we need to get the COVID passport. But of course, they've got no notes. So that was then a difficulty, which we've then had to chase down, and we managed to sort it out. But it was a bit difficult trying to sort out the COVID pass.
And were you asked in your registration process, had you ever served in the armed forces?
We weren't asked, but we did state to the practice that, you know, there might be difficulty getting them or there might be a delay on getting them because I'd spent the last 29 years in the armed forces.
I think that's an important initiative for anyone transitioning to make sure they do state it. And I think if we move on to the sort of meat of the podcast in terms of actually helping all GPs understand the transition process and the importance that their role has in helping people transition. And so, Robin, what would you identify as the key issues around transition for an NHS GP and how the GPs can help with that transition?
Well, I think that, you know, I'm an NHS GP now. I'm sitting in my clinic. I got to work at 7 o'clock this morning and it's pretty busy. And so having yet another patient register, we really wouldn't bat an eyelid in thinking that patient was any different to anyone else. So absolutely, on the registration forms that Colin talked about, you know, asking that ever, have you ever served in the military would be a great start, and recording that information. I think the next thing is in the first patient contact, actually asking that question and showing the patient that you recognise him in the military, and showing an interest would make a big difference. You know, I think that would make the veteran, you know, much more likely to warm up to their GP and perhaps disclose that actually they were finding transition difficult and their coping mechanisms weren't good. So that simple question, have you ever served in the military, would be my top tip. And the second tip was making sure that as part of the registration process, that question was asked. And I would also, you know, encourage the NHS GP, just because they don't know anything about the military and they might not know all the terms that we use and abbreviations, actually showing an interest is all that we're after. There are specific resources available for veterans, but the main thing is to recognise that the patient has got a military background. You know, being in the military, you know, recent events in Afghanistan, you know, I served in Afghanistan and I've been really troubled by what's happened over the last couple of months. And I think anyone who'd served in Afghanistan would be the same. Now, that doesn't mean to say that we've got PTSD or a mental health problem, but, you know, an event like a world event like that, particularly in Afghanistan, definitely has affected my sleep, definitely made me a little bit more anxious, but I'm able to cope with it. But it's things like that, because you're military, it may be that is likely to affect the way that you present to your GP. And if the GP knows that, he'll pick it up.
That's really helpful, Robin. Thank you. I wonder if it might be useful to outline for GPs that aren't quite as familiar with the military transition process as you are, what potentially likely presentations might there be in a person transitioning from the services?
Nicky, that's a great question. As you said in your introduction, there's 2.4 million veterans. Veterans are likely to have served all over the world. There's a higher proportion that smoke. And as a result, there is a higher proportion that have got long-term conditions. But top of the list for me are mental health issues. And while the thing that you hear a lot about is PTSD, actually anxiety and depression are commoner in veterans than they are in the NHS population. Now, unfortunately, in the military, our way of coping is often through alcohol. And rightly or wrongly in the military, you know, celebrations inevitably consume alcohol. And therefore, when you leave the military, your way of coping under stress may well be to use alcohol as an escape route in large amounts. And that is likely in longer term to make you more depressed, make you more anxious, and of course isn't a very good coping strategy. So, you know, the transition is going to be a time of anxiety. And I think if you have an underlying mental health condition, that underlying condition is going to be much more at the front. But actually, on top of that, you're trying to find a house, you're trying to find where the kids are going to school, and your own mental health may not come to the surface, and therefore you're more likely to present late. Going back to the beginning, asking that question, have you ever served in the military, will be the simple acknowledgement that you understand that the patient has got that military background, and that background may be underpinning the mental health of the veteran. It's not just mental health problems, but that would be the top of the list, and that's the area that the NHS GP can quickly make the most difference, because there are resources available to help veterans who are in need. But if you don't ask, you won't find out. And if the veteran doesn't tell you, the GP won't find out. So we need both to help.
Yeah, absolutely. And just in that context, for those people that do transition with an identified illness or injury, whether it's physical or mental health related, you talked a bit about the services, the specialist services that are available. And I think for me, that is something that would help GP practices in swiftly getting the right referral to the right specialist service. Would you like to just touch on what those services might be?
So certainly, you know, I think that someone that leaves the military with a serious illness, that there's a well-trodden path and a transferal of notes. Specifically, mental health. If a serviceman is receiving mental health treatment right up in the time that they leave, there's a process through what's now called Op Courage, where the serviceman can go on being seen for 6 months by the military psychiatric nurse or the military psychiatric team, and then they can be seamlessly transferred across the NHS under Op Courage. So there are specific mental health pathways that can smoothly transit the care of the patient while they're receiving treatment in the military to the NHS. So that would be top of the list. I think that when someone has been through our rehabilitation centre and needs seriously more medical help, social services will be involved beforehand. So what I'm talking about is the majority of veterans will be leaving, but they may well have, you know, actually the time leading up to transition is an anxious time. You know, you've been in the military all these years, what are you going to do next? So it may well be they've got a mental health problem for which they're getting treatment before they leave, and that treatment can be transferred across.
Thanks, Robin. If I may, I've got a point I'd like to make myself, but Colin, if I could ask you to think about, from what Robin's just said, what have you taken away as some of the things you as a veteran would like to ensure that you do and that other veterans know about? But in addition to the services that are available from the NHS, of course, there's a very strong military charity sector which can work in support of the NHS and may well provide additional resources, which is another area that might help GPs in looking after veterans. Colin, I wonder if you've got a couple of points that you might like to make about what you will do, having heard how you could help GPs.
For me, it would be feeding back to the organisation I've left. So I will go back and, all right, it's not necessarily the GP side of things, but it's saying, look, you realise once you're out there, you are out there, you're on your own. You know, you need to be looking at these things. So the position I was in was a very sort of HR-y role. So to my successors, say to them, look, you realise, yes, there is all the help with transitioning from the job front, but the medical side of it needs more awareness for the guys leaving, that when you're out there, you know, you are responsible for yourself. Nobody is there looking after you anymore.
Yes, indeed. And I think it's a good military concept of mutual support. So if you take your responsibility as a veteran transitioning and the GPs do, then actually you get best effect at the end of it. I think we've had a really interesting conversation there, and I thank you both very much for your input, which has been hugely useful, I'm sure, for any GP practice and GPs. And I think the gatekeepers understanding the issues that face the military in transition are important as part of the whole force concept, if you like. But my sort of takeaways from this are always ask the question, have you or a member of your family ever served? And ask that question as opposed to, are you a veteran? Because not everybody identifies as a veteran. That particularly applies to women who have served. Know that there are specialist resources that may help you within the NHS services, but also within the military charity sector. And being familiar with the likely presentations that veterans will have and you need to sort of tease out would be another thing that I would say, which I've drawn from our conversation this afternoon. And I think my call to action to close this podcast would be, please become a veterans-friendly GP practice. And if you're interested in doing so, you can access information on the RCGP website at rcgp.org.uk/veterans. And on that note, Robin, Colin, thank you very much indeed for your contribution today. I hope it helps an awful lot of our GPs. Thank you.